Attention Magazine, making a difference for people affected by ADHD. Check out the October issue, where we'll cover ADHD Awareness Month, misinformation, stigma, and the media, and ADHD champions, surviving and thriving. Attention Magazine is chad.org. Click, join, get involved. Download the Attention Magazine app on iTunes.
This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, AttentionTalkRadio.com, AttentionTalkVideo.com, and AttentionTalkNews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at Facebook.com/AttentionTalkRadio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I am your guest host, ADHD coach Caroline McGuire, and I have a great show for you tonight. Our title is Self-Management, Launching the ADHD Teen. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Mark Burton. Tonight is November 11th, 2015, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And before we get to the meat of our show, I have a few announcements. Tomorrow, actually, is the CHAD conference. It's November 12th to the 14th in New Orleans, Louisiana. You can go to chadchadd.org. If you are in the area, drive on in and register. ADD conferences, we always get a lot of last-minute registrations, and you're welcome. It's a great conference. It's going to give you a lot of comprehensive information, sort of one-stop shopping. There is a new campaign, 1 in 15 million, that you can find out about at chad.org, and please join us in that. Also, Dr. Barkley has asked me to remind you to check out ADHDfund.com, a crowdsourcing website designed to raise money for small-scale research for ADHD worldwide. I think that's the end of our announcement. So let's get into the meat of the show. Again, with us in our studio is Dr. Mark Burton. I want to tell you a little bit about Dr. Burton. First of all, he is a board-certified developmental behavioral pediatrician. He's also an assistant professor in pediatrics at New York Medical College, and he is a consultant for child development and literacy and a member of the editorial advisory board for Common Sense Media. He is definitely a frequent speaker on ADHD, autistic spectrum disorders, parenting, and mindfulness, and he has a contribution to the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. And he has a great brand new book out, Mindful Parenting for ADHD, which I can attest I have used with my little people in my family and my clients, and it works great. So without further ado, Dr. Burton, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
No problem. Dr. Burton, I'll give the folks some background. We had conceived of this show because many times, I'm sure with you, clients come to me and talk about this dilemma that you have this ADHD teen, you want them to launch, you want them to go to college, you want them to go out and to the world, but they don't have the self-regulation of other teenagers or other peers, and, you know, that it's this dilemma. Do I hold on? Do I, you know, sort of become too involved? And so I thought that this would be something that we should cover in a show, you know, in terms of what is it that's going on for these teens, and then, you know, what are the best ways to launch them a little bit. So I'll just start with this sort of question. What do you think is going on? Why are ADHD teens a little bit harder to launch?
Well, I think that's a great starting point. And I think the simplest way to look at it for kids often, I think, is that, you know, since ADHD affects really a bunch of skills having to do with life management, you know, one way you can look at it is it's almost like a developmental delay in life management skills that you can often have someone who's, you know, as bright as anyone else and as motivated as anyone else, or, whatever you want to throw out there, but their ability to manage day-to-day life is several years behind where you'd hope it would be. And then for teens, you have to add on, you know, this other piece which makes things so challenging for parents often, which is that part of typical teen development is to start, you know, the goal of becoming a teen is to transition from being a child to an adult. So you're supposed to become more independent. So you kind of have this kind of contradiction where you have a teenager or, you know, I think that transition really starts in high school, who is getting ready to go out into the world on their own. So in many ways, is going to start pushing back from parenting, parents and parents' advice, and that's normal development. But at the same time, you know, the actual skills they have to manage day-to-day life aren't quite where you'd want them to be yet. So, I think clearly that's why you wanted to do this the show, because that obviously sets up a very challenging situation for parents.
Yes, that's absolutely well put, and I appreciate it. And in terms of your experience, you know, obviously this, you have a deep root in some of the biological things here. I have parents ask a lot, you know, when will these teenagers be as mature as their peers? So could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think it's a common question, and I think there's a few different threads that are important to know. One is that normal brain development, which is very different even than they taught me in medical school, because it's a relatively new finding, is that the part of the brain related to ADHD matures till you're almost 30. So, you know, there's going to be ongoing growth for a while. But the part that's harder to separate out is that many of the ways we define maturity are really executive function-based skills. And since, you know, ADHD is really best understood as a, you know, disorder affecting executive function, which is things like, you know, impulse control and attention for sure, but also organizing and planning for the future and managing your emotions and, you know, many, many other skills that really are directly, part of how we define maturity. So when you ask the question of, in many ways, when you ask the question of whether, you know, when is someone going to catch up to peers, it's not that different than saying, like, you know, are they outgrowing their ADHD? They're not necessarily separate.
Right.
So as much as, you know, that is an important question. I mean, clearly some people do seem to outgrow their ADHD. So, that's one possibility. So the equally important question to when will they, you know, mature to the point that they can take care of themselves, which, you know, isn't, there is no definitive answer from the neurological side, except that, you know, some people say up to half of people with ADHD outgrow, childhood ADHD outgrow it. But the more important practical question, I think, is for someone whose executive function skills are immature, you know, how can we set them up with the tools they need to thrive, you know, in spite of that? You know, in many ways, a lot of executive function is is simply a skill set. I mean, it's an incredibly impairing and wide-ranging skill set, but it is a lot of, you know, practical cognitive skills we use to manage everyday life. So a lot of the solutions, you know, have less to do with waiting for, I mean, I think, I would even say a lot. When it comes to ADHD specifically, most of the solutions, if not all, come from how do we build the right supports, you know, while we're waiting to see if they mature out of it.
Right. I think that's a great explanation, and I love something you said about defining maturity, and obviously I know that it's stage, not age, but I think a lot of parents are sort of hoping that, you know, once they hit 18, and that's not necessarily the case. But you said something about the executive function that I thought was really important in terms of the ability to build these tools. I'm sure you often find, as I do, that sometimes what's happening is the parents have become the teenager's executive function. So I guess that brings me to sort of we'll get to skills in a second, but how involved do you find parents need to be during this period? Is there a little bit of letting them fail forward, or would you advise against that?
I'm not a huge fan of just letting, letting kids just, I think you use the term fail forward. I mean, you're basically, when people, the other way people talk about that is sort of like natural consequences in life. And, I don't think that's fair to someone who has ADHD a lot of the time because again, you're not going to learn from natural consequences alone unless someone helps you manage the skills that are behind. The amount of involvement, there's two pieces to look at side by side because it's not solely parents anymore, when kids get to this age, ideally. It's also helping these teenagers, these almost young adults, find the other supports they're going to be using so that so there is a need for parental involvement and guidance as much as you can manage, and that's, there's no black and white answer because that has a lot to do with individual relationships and development, and there's no right or wrong. It's not anybody's fault if, some kids need to be more independent and some don't on a emotional level. Mm-hmm. The more, I guess another way of looking at it that I think may be more practical that I often describe for parents is I think, and again, this to me goes all the way back to high school, but it goes through this transition, is they're often, in very young kids, a lot of ADHD management is, very almost exclusively parent-driven. You can make the decisions you think will be most useful for your child and then sort of enact them, whether it's around homework routines or sleep routines or, working with which coach or therapist you're going to work with. Those are all decisions you're making as a parent. Then suddenly you have a teenager, which, you can't, teens are teens and you can't do anything about that really. And they're going to want to be independent and push back, and they're not always going to do everything you say directly. So I think the kind of thought process has to change a little bit when you have a teenager to one where the adults in the room have a lot of practical discussion. The adults in the room kind of say, all right, separate from, the child at this point, separate from your teenager, all right, let's sit down, with whoever's helping us out here. Hopefully there's somebody involved who can be an outside source to bounce the discussion off of and say, like, okay, where is, Joe now in terms of his ability to be independent and his decision-making and everything else? And really, separating out the fact that, all the stuff that got us into this discussion today at all, everything teens bring to the table, just have a separate discussion of like, okay, practically speaking, what do we think, really needs to happen here? Then, with teens, what's different than younger kids is you have to then say, okay, now how are we going to make that happen? Or how much is possible of this big plan? So that it becomes kind of a second level discussion where then you bring the teenager into discussion and say like, okay, we feel like there's still a lot of challenge going on around organization and planning, try to have some kind of discussion about, again, how you're going to get those supports more concretely in place. But the problem you often run into if you just kind of jump in with both feet and bring the adolescent, into the discussion from the start is that you're beginning from this place of, maybe the teenager not wanting to be at the table at all to begin with or not wanting to feel different or some level of denial about their ADHD or they have their own view of how things need to be done. And all of that's important to address, too. But on a practical planning level, it's sometimes useful to just start with, like, okay, what do I think? What do his teachers think? What if we, and just really try to sort through the practicalities of it separately a little bit.
So I love what you're saying, because you're basically advocating a collaborative approach where instead of deciding, you're not ready to go to college, so you're going to do a post-grad year, or, you're going to go to this college because it's nearby in an arbitrary way, you're really advocating making some discussions and then also involving the young person in their own self-management.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's, you have to with teenagers. And again, this is where it's a tightrope that ties. It's very nuanced in that, you know, while you, you know, like I said, I mean, first you probably have to have some clear sense of what you know, what range you think is okay, and then you have to bring your, you know, the adolescent to discussion and try to make it more collaborative. And then, yeah, you can absolutely end up in very challenging situations, you know, and there are times where parents are going to have to stay in that role of parents a little longer if someone you think is making a, you know, a decision that's totally out of bounds. But for teens in general, the goal becomes, you know, one other way you can often, you know, metaphor I sometimes use is, well, I don't know that I'm exclusive in this, is you want to feed them rope, but you want to feed them rope slowly and just see how independent they're capable of being and how, and how skillful their decision making is, you know, kind of step by step. So, you know, even if you have a very clear idea of what they want to do with their future, you know, you let them go first maybe, and you sort of get some sense of, you know, where they are, and then maybe try to guide the discussion. Without just sort of saying, you know, most teenagers have outgrown the place of being able to just say, you know, this is what you're going to do.
Right.
Another really useful resource to look at. And this is something I often talk to parents of teenagers about when they're, you know, younger, although not everyone listening to this, you know, their kids may already be older, but there's still ways to find it. Are one very useful thing for many families is to bring a third party into discussion, because if you have someone who developmentally is trying to move past, you know, relying on their parents so much, and yet still needs somebody's support to help them with these decisions and life management and, you know, setting up a good school plan and making strong decisions around school when it's possible. I know there's a, you know, again, one of the main challenges in the field of developmental pediatrics is just resources. I mean, it just is, you know, not everyone has the resources, you know, either financially or locally or in terms of time. But when it's possible, what can be really useful for parents to take the stress off of them, to feel like something practical is being done without that strain, is to, you know, basically assign some of it to another person, you know, so make it more of a, you know, we're part of the discussion, but I also, you're going to be talking to this ADHD coach or this psychologist or this, you know, teacher at school you like or your guidance counselor, and allow them to feel independent about it. And hopefully as a parent, you have a relationship with this other person too and trust this other person also. But that's an important transition. And again, it's one I often advocate for a little earlier in high school when it's possible, just because it can be such a stress off families when, you know, it's not exactly what we're, it's the same concept, but it's not exactly what we're talking about today. But even around something like, how are you going to manage your schoolwork? You know, it can be a huge relief for families if you say, like, look, you know, you have the learning center at school. As long as you and the teacher in the learning center at school come up with a good plan, I'm going to really take a step back as much as I can.
Absolutely.
And that's a way, yeah.
So, Dr. Burton, we have to take a break, but I love what you're saying in terms of bringing an objective third party in who, you know, could be the guidance counselor, somebody else who the teenager might actually listen to also a little more about this. When we come back, I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, what parents can do to look at this self-regulation skill and build it, because a lot of parents will say, you know, I want the teenager to acquire this skill, but other than time, I'm not really sure what to do. So I would love to get into that. I wanted to make sure to let everyone know that Dr. Burton has a new book out, Mindful Parenting for ADHD, and he also conducts mindfulness classes online, and you can find those at developmentaldoctor.com, and just really wonderful things in the book that can help you as you try to have more mindfulness in our daily life. I'm going to go to commercial, and then we will be right back with Dr. Mark Burton.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. Before the break, Dr. Burton was explaining to us about sort of, you know, what's the dilemma with self-regulation in teenagers with ADHD, and then, you know, taking this collaborative approach where you have, you know, maybe even a third party help with the discussion for some realistic planning as we try to launch our ADHD teenagers in sort of a scaffolded way. And Dr. Burton, you know, I have many young people I work with who I get them when they have gone to college and actually failed out, which is everyone's worst fear. I've had teenagers come to me who've actually racked up debt, which, you know, goes back to self-regulation, who have, you know, failed out of college and who have really had a rough time and basically weren't ready. And I think that's all the parents' worst fears. And often parents say to me, you know, I'd like to know what we can do in terms of building these executive function skills. And I just wanted to hear your perspective on some specific from what would you recommend?
Let me talk very briefly generally first and then more specifically.
Sure.
You know, generally, I think whenever there's a transition around ADHD, it's useful to kind of organize your thoughts into different areas of different potential interventions, and then you can use that kind of framework to just reexamine whether something needs to change. You know, we've done it this way before, and it needs to be augmented, or we need to cut back on it. So generally speaking, before I get into more of the specifics, you know, during those transitions, it can be useful to look at, in the educational setting, what are the supports that are possible? And, you know, again, do we need more? Do we need less? Are there, for example, during the college transition, resources on campus we can identify? Even in picking a college, are there ways we can pick a college that fits best? So, you know, while you're still in high school, these are the details of the 504 plan and everything else. So one thing you can reexamine during this college transition are school-based services, and do we, you know, have any need to make changes there? Or the second one are outside of school or family-based or that whole broad picture of everything going on outside of the school setting. So, you know, is there a need for, more structure in the house to support executive function or to work with a coach or a psychologist or a tutor or, you know, anything else that would fall under that umbrella of sort of non-medical interventions that are outside the school setting? The third one is medication. You know, is there a role for medication here? Are the medications optimized? Are they working long enough? Are they causing side effects? So the third thing, and that's not saying for or against medication. It's just saying it's an option for ADHD. And during
sure.
transitions, you can sort of just look at it again and say, you know, how do we feel about it? How are we doing with it? And that's the third piece. And the fourth one, I think, is a little broader, and I'm not even sure talked about enough yet, which is that ADHD tends to affect just general daily health routines in ways that are almost like vicious circles, where, you know, better sleep improves ADHD, or makes people with ADHD feel better, might improve their attention, but ADHD gets in the way of sleep. You can say the same thing about exercise and nutrition and technology. So a fourth area to look at is, you know, all right, is there something we could be working with there? So that's kind of like a general framework during any transition of, you know, is there something we could be working on? Obviously, it's complicated when you have a teenager. You're not going to just suddenly be able to say you need to go to sleep 2 hours earlier necessarily. But again, there's always that two-level decision-making and thinking going on to me of just like, let's just look at the situation ourselves first, and then we can, you know, then we can talk about collaborating with the teenager and seeing what we can make happen. So that's kind of the bigger umbrella. You know, when it comes to a lot of the specifics people are talking about around ADHD management and how do you make things better, I would say, first of all, it does start from that platform, because if you can optimize any of those four areas, often some of the daily skills can click, you know, just through that overall picture of ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
More specifically, when it comes to executive function, you know, I think Russell Barkley's concept of externalizing the system is one piece of it. So I'm going to talk about, I can talk about emotion separately, but when it comes to the kind of daily life management, daily task management around ADHD, you know, the core concept is, you know, basically creating structure that on the one hand is how, you know, just makes life easier day to day. And on the other hand, often it's how you start internalizing some of these skills. So, you know, they're not, you can't necessarily separate the two, which is a good thing. There's only one thing to do, really. You start creating new habits and routine, which is really hard for all of us, and perhaps even harder when you have ADHD. And then through that reinforcement and repetition, they actually become habits. And that could be about, I think, you know, one of the most concise examples, I think, or descriptions of ADHD in school that can be a metaphor for almost anything is forgetfulness is an ADHD symptom. So, you know, if someone's continually getting their grades marked down for being forgetful, in essence, they're being punished for having ADHD. Now, the only solution is to create a system for them, a routine, reinforced by the adults initially, that helps them become less forgetful.
Right.
So when you look at how do you teach executive function skills to a teenager, again, what I said before about collaboration is often important, whereas in a 9-year-old, you might be able to create the homework routine they're going to learn from. Often with a teenager, the negotiation needs to be more like, look, I'll give you more space around this as long as you tell me who you're working, you know, that you're going to commit to working with. And then, you know, through that relationship, a lot of learning executive function when it comes to the organization and planning side of things, which spills over into writing skills and study skills. And, you know, when I say organization and planning, it's a very big umbrella.
Right.
Really all comes down to, you know, through some combination of whatever you can, you know, add to it yourself, more commonly working with someone else, developing new routines that eventually become habit. So, and this is really where, you know, one of the most proven, or perhaps the most proven non-medical intervention for ADHD is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is similar to coaching, I think, in many ways. But the basic goal is to, you know, identify the underlying issue, you know, the underlying trigger, the underlying issues that are causing a challenge in life somewhere, and then very directly, you know, work with some new other, you know, provide direct tools to doing something different, which is a perhaps gross a simplification of a very large field of psychology. But basically, you know, that is a very proven intervention in and of itself, and I'm not sure it always feels that way, but the basic premise is for anybody who's struggling, especially on the organization and planning side of things, you know, the only way through it is to just directly teach skills. But even that gets muddied around ADHD too, because so much of ADHD can falsely appear like motivation and poor effort and not caring enough. And, you know, that it's just a vital concept around ADHD in general that, to me, giving someone the benefit of the doubt means assuming from the start that it's their executive function getting in the way. It's not that they don't care. It's not that they, you know, aren't working hard enough. I mean, And that is meant to be a simplification. I mean, there's certainly, it isn't true that always it's going to turn out to be only executive function, but it is a way to start from a more problem-solving point of view and say, okay, you know, how might executive function explain the fact that somebody is, you know, always late? Or how might executive function explain the fact that someone procrastinates too much? Because if
right.
you look at it, when you can look at it like with those skills, all right, so the sum of the procrastination comes from not estimating time so well, and some of it comes from not prioritizing time so well on a day-to-day level. Some of it comes from the fact that they've learned that, you know, which is true, that, you know, when the pressure really goes up, they focus a little better. You know, so looking at it on a more practical level, you know, how can we break those patterns and teach something more practical?
So I love what you're saying here, and there's so much. I have a bunch of questions, but you know what I hear you saying is that, I'm going to go back by looking at the young person through this. We call it in coaching ADHD lens, but you're basically saying the lens of the executive function. You're kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt rather than assuming that their, you know, lack of preparation is an intention. Or, you know, some plot to sabotage. And you kind of touched on it a little bit, but I hear you edging up against this sort of, you know, people do well if they can philosophy. And what I love about that is I think that's sort of part of what ends up in this vortex of parent-child conflict, is this philosophical issue. Have you seen... parents do better when they take this more, you know, people do well if they can approach?
I've honestly seen things turn around like in a day in terms of relationships. It can be an incredible shift in a relationship. And I've had parents say to me, like, just like in a, you know, as soon as like this switch went on and they said, wait, you know, he's not intentionally, you know, forgetful. He's not intentionally trying to get my goat. He's not, and it's something interesting because on a logical level, I think most of us would say that in a conversation, but kind of on a visceral level, it doesn't always feel that way. But then when you reach this different understanding of executive function of like, you know, this is hard stuff. This is a, you know, challenging, wide-ranging skill set, or it's not a challenging skill set, but when there's differences in the skill set, it's very challenging and wide-ranging. And you know, it doesn't, no one wants to be living with that any more than you want to be, you know, struggling with them around it. So absolutely, it can be a huge shift just in a moment to say, you know, when I talk about, you know, just seeing ADHD in part, you know, just acknowledging what's going on with with ADHD, it overlaps with mindfulness, which we can come to if we have time later, but just recognizing what's going on with ADHD can just shift so much. Like, so when you look at executive function, for example, you know, part of having attention challenges often is you have difficulty shifting attention, which means if you have a you know, a child who's really, really focused on one thing and you say, we got to go in 10 minutes, and then they don't acknowledge you at all, and, you know, and it just escalates from there, it can really feel like you are being ignored or they're being oppositional or difficult, when, you know, in reality, if you can't shift attention, you never really heard the information, you never processed or heard the information to begin with.
Right.
So, you know, so the issue is executive function, and a really nuanced one can even be around impulsivity, which is, you know, so loaded. I mean, it doesn't mean that because you have poor impulsivity, it's okay that you hit somebody, or it's okay that you, you know, do something, you know, totally inappropriate. But it's important to nuance out that somebody who's, you know, acted impulsively didn't plan on it. That's kind of the point of being impulsive. You know, they were impulsive because they're impulsive. They have ADHD. And that,
right.
you know, that shift of like, well, it isn't really their fault exactly. I mean, they need to be responsible. And it's not a, you know, again, you start getting into these really subtle concepts around ADHD. It's not that they're entirely off the hook for misbehaving. It's not that they don't have to necessarily make amends afterwards. And there is, you know, and they might need to be disciplined if they've done something. And all of that's true, too. But that shift in perspective to just acknowledge that the impulsiveness also isn't their fault is a really important one.
I love this, and I know we need to take a break, but I feel like this mindset piece is not something that's always talked about as much, but like you, I've seen it change everything, even to the point where parents and children are laughing about things that, you know, to some extent are not funny, right? But to some extent, you know, you have to work together. So I love this idea of a shift in perspective and this collaborative, you know, mindset and also trying to look at it through the lens of executive function rather than like a malicious intent, you know, having absolute benefits while you go through this journey. So when we get back, we'll definitely talk more about, you know, this role, and then I'd love to hear a little bit about the mindfulness in regards to this topic. But before I go, let's not forget Dr. Mark Burton is on with us. He has come out with a great new book called Mindful Parenting for ADHD. He is an expert in ADHD, and he has mindfulness classes online at his website, developmentaldoctor.com. And really great to have him on. We're going to take a quick break and then come back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome back everyone. We are having a fascinating discussion with Dr. Mark Burton here in our virtual studio. And before the break, we were talking about and I'll throw my prejudice in, one of my favorite subjects, which is this idea of problem solving with teens and young people. I even do it with children, and I'm sure Dr. Burton does too, considering their point of view, allowing this also executive function or ADHD lens where we, instead of looking at them as, you know, intentionally trying to do something, understanding there is no intent. And, you know, this shift in perspective piece, Dr. Burton, you talk about in your writings and in your book, and you talk about creating harmony through this shift in perspective, but also with mindfulness. And, you know, sometimes creating a little bit of a better environment allows us to work on these concrete skills or create this collaborative point of view. You know, almost like let the things calm down enough. Can you speak a little bit when you say creating harmony with mindfulness? What you mean?
Sure. Again, I think I can almost talk about that two ways. I mean, one is just kind of the, you know, I'll talk about mindfulness specifically second, but one is just the bigger concept and really the bigger reason even to practice mindfulness is trying to create that sense of, you know, of harmony within a family, and, you know, we're going to not get along all the time, but we're on the same page. And and one of the things I often talk to families about, you know, there's a lot of fearfulness often of just even seeking an evaluation for ADHD, which is probably a different point than most of the viewers here are at. But just conceptually, it's just what you said of, you know, once you can identify that a lot of really stressful things going on are being caused by ADHD, even before you start doing a specific intervention of any kind, things often change a lot. And that's because, you know, it's just more collaborative. We understand now where things are coming from. When it comes to mindfulness, which is, a much bigger concept and is a very, you know, popular thing to be talking about nowadays, you know, the simplest way to look at mindfulness is that it's not particularly And, you know, it's not particularly an attention practice. It's not, certainly not about sitting still or, you know, being, you know, always blissful or anything. I mean, mindfulness is a really practical way of just dealing with all the stress and uncertainty of everyday life. And when it comes to ADHD, it has just huge value as a starting point for helping everyone get on the same page and for even making decisions around ADHD, because one of the core things we can say in life is that ADHD itself causes an awful lot of stress, so that it's affecting day-to-day relationships, it's affecting day-to-day self-management skills, it's affecting how you just handle, you know, and we're here to talk about college, you know, the transition to college. So all that stuff you have to be doing as a high school student becomes more stressful, and all the things we talked about earlier in the show as a parent of, you know, how do you transition your child to college, which is all stressful enough, becomes more stressful. And while, you know, stress is just part of life, so, you know, there's no promise in, you know, there's a program, for example, called mindfulness-based stress reduction, you know, that's never been called mindfulness-based stress elimination, because that's not healthy or possible. But the problem is that all the stress that's being amplified around ADHD gets in the way of everything we're trying to do around ADHD. So that, you know, when we're in fight or flight mode, when we're stressed, when we're all amped up all the time, that affects how we communicate and it affects how we think, and it often shuts down creative problem solving, and it just cuts down and undermines our resilience. That's too much of a academic word, but just, you know, we just feel run down all the time. So that,
right,
you know, we're trying to, you know, just keep moving and make good choices and be open-minded and compassionate and all whatever it is we're trying to bring to the family. And yet, if we're just chronically stressed, that's going to get in the way. So the mindfulness part for me, and the reason I started, bringing it into medicine is really twofold. I mean, I was fortunate to be introduced to it, probably 10 years at least before I started using it in my medical practice, and found it just a useful way to manage the fact that life's often stressful. But then the science kind of totally caught up, and, you know, over the last 10 or 15 years, there's been this exponential body of research really proving that mindfulness has a role in medicine and psychology. And that role isn't, you know, one of the things people often talk about, there's often this impression, you know, that one of the mindfulness practices has to do with focused attention. And certainly one thing we can talk about mindfulness and ADHD, which comes back to a question you asked earlier, is certainly a consistent mindfulness practice has been shown to improve attention and executive function, which is a piece of what it brings to ADHD care. And yet often to me, the much more vital short-term piece is that if you can offer parents, there are a lot of teen programs also, well, that's a whole other discussion of how do you introduce it to teens, but if you can offer anybody just, these practical, accessible tools that just help make things feel more manageable, that, in and of itself changes how you're going to manage ADHD.
There's so many things. I mean, we could go on forever, and I know we are running out of time. But, you know, what I think is really important, and you made this so clear, and thank you, is just, you know, if you're in fight or flight mode, where the house is in chaos, or you and I have both seen this, where mom and dad are so panicked about this college transition that they, like, can't even see straight, you know, really you're not going to get to creative problem solving, and you're not going to get to a good, calm discussion with anyone. And I love this idea of, giving yourself this stress reduction, because, you know, it is such a stressful thing to have ADHD or to parent a child with ADHD. And you also mentioned something I really was interested in, which is, there's this double benefit of improving attention and executive function. And just quickly painting for the viewers, what is the kind of thing they would have to do to take up mindfulness?
The best analogy for mindfulness is it's kind of like physical exercise. It's kind of like almost like cognitive fitness in a way. So when you start practicing mindfulness, you're identifying, you know, these perspectives or traits or skills that, you know, that you think you'll find useful. And then through just reinforcing them, trying to make them more habitual for yourself. And one of the coolest new aspects of brain science we have now is this concept of neuroplasticity, which is that anything we do repetitively, you know, literally rewires the brain, which is a big change in how we used to think of the brain. So if you want to get started with a mindfulness practice, there's typically two broad areas you can look at, and then the physical fitness analogy works really well. One is like kind of hitting the gym. So one part of mindfulness practice is just practicing it every day, and that does mean figuring out a way to schedule it, and it doesn't have to be necessarily a lot of time. It could be like 15 minutes to start, 10 minutes to start, sometimes a little longer. So one aspect of mindfulness practice are formal mindfulness practices. And it's important, especially if you have ADHD, to recognize that there's no demand that you're going to sit still. There's practices where you can move. There's never any premise that you're going to have a totally still mind. So, through the practice of mindfulness, we're trying to pay attention more often, but there's, no assumption for anybody that it's ever going to be perfect. In fact, some of what we're working with is just being accepting of the fact that we're trying, but we're not getting there, which is a useful practice in and of itself. We're doing our best, and then we refocus every time we find ourselves distracted, which again is true whether or not you have ADHD. Is going to happen an awful lot.
Right.
So one side of just beginning with a mindfulness practice is that you do some sort of formal mindfulness practice, often called mindfulness meditation. You try to do it every day, you aim to do it every day. Your schedule is going to get in the way, and then you just come back to it when you can. And the core concept of the formal practice, the really important thing to know, is that the assumption isn't that the practice itself has any particular value. You're not taking that break because it's necessarily going to be, instant relaxation or anything else. I mean, it can be very peaceful and relaxing. There's a real value, I think, to taking that little rest during the day, in essence, giving your mind a few minutes to just take a break. And yet the far, far more important thing is that if you practice it every day, it becomes more accessible in everyday life. Again, you can use a physical analogy of if you want to go into piano moving for a living, and you need to bulk up a lot, you can't just go start lifting pianos. You got to hit the gym for a while and try to get physically stronger, and then you can go start lifting the pianos. When it comes to stress management, if you come in with the premise that I'm going to use these mindfulness tools only when I'm very stressed because that's when I need them, they're not going to be familiar enough or habitual enough to have as much value. But if you just practice every day, then somewhere down the road in a few months, you'll find yourself, falling back on them more easily. And then the second half of mindfulness practice is kind of like taking the stairs at work instead of the elevator. It's kind of like the informal practice of mindfulness, which means that if you identify, certain skills you want to be working on, you can really try, just try reminding yourself to do them in everyday life. So, if you want to be a little less reactive, when you're frustrated, you can practice that during the formal practice in ways that, if you took a class or read a book, you'd read about a little more. I can't get into the details, but you can work on that during formal practice. Or you can just remind yourself in everyday life that you'd like to try to just work on catching yourself and coming back. And it gets easier, even though, without judgment, we all have our traits, and it's not like it's going to be an instant fix, but you can work on it. Or another great informal practice with kids is, use any time with your kids as a practice of giving full attention to an activity. So you whatever it is you're doing with your kids, even with a teenager, you can make it almost an informal mindfulness practice by just noticing when you're thinking of, your worries that he's going to fail out of college, or thinking about some problem you had at work that day, or thinking about what you're going to make for dinner. And then you just come back and say, for these 15 minutes, I'm just going to hang out here. I'm just going to give my full attention to the situation. And then in a few minutes, you drift away again, and then you come back, and you just keep reminding yourself over and over again that you want to give your full attention to this particular, moment, this particular activity you're doing. And that's a mindfulness practice, too. There was actually a study that came out just this month on mindfulness and washing the dishes, which is a famous old quote. But the core, I mean, famous, it's an old mindfulness instruction of when you're washing the dishes, just wash the dishes. But the core premise there is, you can wash the dishes and be angry you're washing the dishes, and you can wash the dishes and be ruminating about all the things in life that are worrying you, or you can really, take that activity as a chance to give your full attention to somebody, something, and to let your mind take a rest.
Absolutely.
Any activity can be done that way.
Oh, I love that, because that puts it in our wheelhouse, because a lot of ADHD people struggle with this idea of, a separate activity, as you know, whereas that makes it more of using mundane daily stuff and making it, part of this mindful practice, which I love. And I think, one of my big takeaways from this is to remind ourselves that the neuroplasticity rewires the brain, and that, the stress has direct effects on the brain, we know from research, and that, this idea of everybody finding a way to manage the stress really could be helpful for the entire, big transition to college as we try to send our young people off or manage, what we're going to do. So I think this has just been great. It gives parents some wonderful tools, and my big, big takeaway is the collaborative approach. Dr. Burton, thank you so much. I really think this gives parents some great ideas of what to do and how to then manage the stress.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for the invite to be here. So I do hope people find it useful.
Absolutely. We will definitely be... having Dr. Burton again. Thank you so much, everybody, for this edition of Attention Talk Radio, and we'll see you next time.